You're listening to the Drummers Education Connection Podcast. Interviews with the greatest drummers in the business and roundtable discussions with industry leaders and teachers from around the globe to help provide performance, insight, and inspiration.
You're doing a terrible job.
Everybody, I'm Mark Rowley. Welcome to the deck. I'm here with my three great friends, Rick Stojak down in San Diego, Chip Ritter in Tucson, Jeremy Steinkohler up in the San Francisco Bay Area. And today we have got Tosh Peterson on. Tosh is an amazing drummer. He is fantastic. And we are just so, you know, honored to have him here on deck. I want to tell a little story about how I met him. Before we get started, I want to do a little bit of housekeeping if I can. We started a Patreon account a few weeks ago to kind of keep the lights on around here. So if you want to donate to that, you can. Chip is going to put the link in the comments on the Facebook page. And if you go to YouTube and you like the Drummers Education YouTube channel, please like it and follow us. We'd really appreciate that.
Bart, Tosh, what do you get if you become a Patreon?
If you become a Patreon, you get all kinds of cool stuff. You get a mention on the deck. You get Chip Ritter comes over and cleans your windows, and you get a he'll rotate the air and the tires on your car and all kinds of cool stuff. So, you know, it's pretty. Tosh wants to win that. He was saying he needed his air rotated the other day.
Yeah, big time.
Tosh, how are you, buddy?
Doing fantastic, man. Thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, man, thanks for being here. I met Tosh and I met a few weeks ago. I was over at Aquarian setting up for the Deck Days Clinic, and Tosh and his dad came in, and just super cool guy. He was picking up some heads, and we got to talking drums and everything like that. Now, dude, do me a favor. Tell our listeners, tell all the people that you play for, who you have subbed for. I mean, the list is phenomenal. I mean, totally, like, nowadays, legit up-and-coming or huge artists. I shouldn't even say upcoming. I mean, come on, tell us. Let us hear it.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, I've been really lucky to play with a bunch of my favorite artists and work with a bunch of really cool people. I currently tour with an artist named Jaden and another artist named The Kid Laroi. I've gotten to play for Machine Gun Kelly, Young Thug, Bad Bunny, Lil Nas X, a ton of different people that I really love working with. And yeah, I mean, I've been touring since I was 16, and I'm 21 now, and it's just kind of keeps getting busier and busier.
That's fantastic.
Congratulations, man.
Thank you so much.
Beautiful.
Yeah, you were, when we were standing there talking, you were just talking about, you threw out, oh yeah, I'm going to be playing, you know, Madison Square Garden. And you threw it out like, you know, oh yeah, I'm, you know, playing the bar up the street. I was like, wow, man, Madison Square Garden. So when is that? And who's that with?
That's in about a week with the Kid Laroi. We're doing this Jingle Ball thing. It's like a Christmas tour. Uh-huh. And yeah, so we play MSG is like the second stop. So yeah, I'm very excited for that.
Man, that is so awesome. Cool.
I played at the bar at Madison Square Garden.
Oh, sick. That's awesome.
I walked past Madison Square Garden once. I've seen it.
Yeah, I know. I've never even been inside. I've been to New York countless times, and I always walk past it, never gotten to even go inside.
Oh, it's pretty cool, man. It's a special place. You'll love it.
So the first time going inside, you're going to get to play the joint, man. That's pretty bitching, man. Cool. Very cool. Very cool. So tell us now, your dad's a drummer too. We got to talking about that the other day at Aquarian. How did you get started playing the drums? Because on your bio, it says you started playing at the age of two. How did the whole thing start for you?
Yeah. So I was kind of always like banging on stuff and then I was like, I got like super weird and hyper focused. Like at two, like my parents got me a drum set for my second birthday, and like, that's all I wanted to do. And I would just sit there, and like, you could literally show me a single stroke roll, and I would just sit there and do a single stroke all day. And I was just like so excited on drums, even at a little kid. I don't even remember it. You know, they have videos and pictures of me. And they say that I would just like play all day, and that's all I ever wanted to do. And honestly, it's still that way. And I just kind of practice drums a lot, you know.
Beautiful. What? Just curious. I know this is sort of a sideways question here, but what do you practice most of the time?
I really like to like try to teach myself different independence things. So I'll be like, okay, if I do this rudiment on my hands, And then what if I did this with my feet and this with my feet? And I do a lot of that. So I'll just kind of turn on a metronome and get going like that. Mm-hmm. I have a warm up routine. It's kind of hard to explain it with words, but it starts out with just like singles between the hands and feet around the drums and stuff. And it goes on for at least an hour about. And wow. So an hour to two, depending on how, you know, how warmed up I need to be. I mean, it's a lot of that, a lot of learning music lately, just because I have so much material working with different artists and stuff. I have so much to learn and get ready for. And so a lot of that. And then also, like, now I do a lot of recording from home as well. So, you know, a lot of my playing is recording at the same time too. So which has been super fun too.
What's your process for learning tunes when you've got to learn a whole bunch? We've had this discussion before. Everyone's got a little bit of a different way of going about it. What's your process for when you have to learn a whole bunch of tunes in a short amount of time?
Yeah, so I have like a little bit of a charting method that I can just do on my phone or write it down. Like, it's super easy. I just I basically just will write out like, you know, four on the floor starts intro or something like that. You know, just stuff like that, and just make little notes for the verse and the chorus. And if it's the second chorus is the exact same as the first one, and I'll just write same and mm-hmm. stuff like that. And just little charts like that. And so I'll listen through it and stop and start and write down as I go. And then I listen through the song again and I just read along. And then I usually play along. And by the third or fourth time, I pretty much have it down to where I can just play it, you know? And, right. And then if I just, you know, continue playing it a few more times so I can remember it, but yeah, it's pretty, I've like, found a way to the writing it down like that, like, just helps me remember the songs really well, and then I'll remember what I wrote down in my head almost, you know. Mm-hmm. And like, if I'm not looking at the notes, even if I like had to learn something last minute, I'll like think of what it says in my head for that part, you know. And it kind of helps me, you know.
Tosh,
I just remember the part.
Do you have a chart handy, one of your handwritten charts, so we could see it?
Let me try to find.
It'd be cool to see.
While you're looking for that, I got another question for you. When you're subbing or coming into a situation where there's already been a drummer in the band before you, do you find that there's an expectation for you to play the parts just like they are in the recording? Or do you have a little bit more leeway to do your own thing with it?
You know, it depends, because pretty much the only like subbing gig I did was with Gene and Kelly. And the rest of them, usually it's like they don't have like a consistent drummer. But Machine Gun Kelly, his drummer is Rook, who's an incredible drummer, and I felt like I went in at first being like, damn, I really need to like know his stuff note for note. I was watching every video, and then as soon as I got in rehearsal, everyone was just so cool. They're like, man, you're a great drummer, just your fills don't have to be his fills, you know. Right. And they kind of loosened it up for me, you know, because I was you know, super nervous on like wanting to do his parts justice, because he's such an incredible drummer. And mm-hmm. and they were like, no, just play like you would play, you know. Nice. Like, you're like, you know, you're a great drummer in your own right. So, you know, fills and stuff, they weren't really worried about. As long as I'm playing the parts of the songs, they're happy.
That's,
you know.
Cool.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that shows respect on both parts. I think that shows respect on your part that, hey, I want to do these parts justice, and I want to do my job, you know, to do his parts justice. But then they respected you as a player, you know. Hey, look, you're a great drummer, do your thing. They trusted you. That's really cool. Very hip.
And I wasn't really sure what to expect. I went into that gig just being like, you know, I just want to do good. And it was I'd been touring for, you know, years before that, but it wasn't anything on that level. And that's kind of what really started the whole new level of bands that I got to work with after that, was from that. So, you know, I've been touring for 4 years, but it was like, you know, touring, you know, smaller opening support tours and stuff like that. And and then doing this, my first show with him was, you know, headlining for 10,000 people in Florida. And it was like, it was right after the pandemic. Like, it was like coming out like right from there, you know, in April 2021. So it was just like kind of right off the bat. So I really just wanted to make a good impression, and the fact that they made it so comfortable for me, like, really made it easy for me to do well, I think, you know.
Good impression, you know, the good impression. I think I like your drumming better than the original drummer. I think you made a hell of an impression.
Oh, thank you, man. Thank you.
How did that gig come to be? What happened to where you were subbing for their drummer?
So Rook actually got he was hit by a car.
Oh.
And broke his leg and wasn't able to play for a couple months, and they had like these, the first show was like this, you know, like welcome back show or whatever, and that was the one in Florida, and the second show was for the NFL draft with like millions of people watching and stuff, so that was like it was all filmed and on TV, and I was I was more worried for the fact that he was at that show. That was the part that scared me more than playing the show. He sat right behind me in his wheelchair, and I was like, awesome, this is going to be terrifying.
No pressure.
Again, I think that shows, again, I mean, respect on both your parts. You know, I mean, you respect him enough to be, you know, have that twinge of nervousness. And that little, oh my God, I got to do a great job. And he wanted to see you do the gig, man. That's really cool, man. That's a very special thing. You said you started touring at 16. You started playing at 2. How did you, I mean, have you had a lot of formal training? Have you studied with, like, you know, at music school or with great teachers, or talk to us about that?
Yeah, so I obviously, my dad being a drummer, I grew up learning from him, and he always like kind of showed me the ropes and stuff. But what I like at a very young age became obsessed with Thomas Pridgen, and I was like, I want to know everything about this guy, you know. And so when I was like 10 or I was maybe 11, my dad took me to I'm trying to remember the name of the Slide Bar in Fullerton. And Thomas Pridgen was playing there for an after NAMM party with his band. And I went and I like sat in the window and watched him play. And he's actually the reason I started posting videos of myself on Instagram, was just to try to get his attention. And so he came up to me after that show, and he was like, oh yeah, I've seen your videos and all this stuff. And I was like 11, so I was freaking out, and I asked him if he would give me lessons. So I ended up taking lessons with him for like 5 years.
Wow.
That's awesome. What did you guys work on? What was the stuff you guys, you know?
You know, he taught me so many different independence exercises, but I think the most important thing that he taught me was like how to teach myself things, kind of. And I still come up with exercises the way he does. And I mean, like, he teaches a similar way to how I would want to learn, which is like very all over the place, where he'll like show me something, and then like in the middle of that, he'll get an idea and show me something else. And I would just be like, okay, cool. And like my brain would like switch to that. And we just like fed off of each other really well, I feel like. So, I mean, I still use his techniques of learning all the way, just like, you know, like, okay, I can play a paradiddle, but what if I play a paradiddle with my feet and then play a double paradiddle with my hands and stuff like that, you know, and just like coming up with like moving stuff around, or like, here's this pattern in 7. Why don't you just play the same drum beat, but then put that on your kick or something like that? You know, just like, very much just like exploring every option. Like, oh, okay, you can play this rudiment, but can you play it every type of way on every drum? You know, it's like, and so we would do a lot of different stuff that kind of went with that. And he showed me just like, really taught me like how to teach myself things, I think is the most important thing he showed me, is because I still sit in here. I don't always have time. I would love to take more lessons with other drummers and stuff still, but I don't always have time to do that. So I just, you know, I need to be able to teach myself things and still learn things while I'm practicing, you know?
Tosh, do you have a favorite recording from Thomas that you listened to, or anything that stood out in his recordings that we can maybe show some younger drummers the link to?
Yeah, I mean, his band, The Memorials, is really the band he was playing with when I first met him. And it was right after the Mars Volta, he went and started this band. And I think that's some of the best drumming to ever be recorded. Yes, they have I think the album's called Delirium. And it's incredible. And he, like, there's a song on there, Anti-Me, that is just like, it's one of the hardest songs ever. And then the drums drop out for like 4 minutes. And it's just like the craziest thing ever. It's just like, and then they come back in, and it's just like insane, because it's just like, they're so experimental. And like, just as a band, it's like, I think it's great for all musicians to hear that band in general, just because it's some of the best musicianship ever recorded.
Right on.
Yeah.
Excellent.
So, did you find your chart there on your phone?
Yeah. So this one is a little different. This is how I do it when I'm recording at home. Mm-hmm. And when I'm recording at home, I watch the screen go along with the measures as I'm recording it.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's backwards, but it looks kind of like that. And I can read it to you. It says like at measure 11, big groove comes in, and then at measure 14, there's those hits. And like just reading the word hits will make me remember how the hits go, mm-hmm. kind of, yeah. and stuff yeah. like that. So it's a little bit different when I'm at home. I couldn't find one of a song that I'm learning for a gig just because it's they must be written down somewhere. I'm not too sure where they are, but but for the recording, it's like I have that way of just being able to like look at it kind of, and yeah. Because I'm not having to perform it for anyone, you know, it's just the audio,
right?
So that's why I'll just read the chart as I'm going, kind of.
Very cool. Very
so what kind of recording system do you have at your house?
So I use the QSC TouchMix 30, and that thing, it's made my life so easy. You just kind of plug in and go, and I've tried some different type, like some different DAWs and stuff, but I just record in a GarageBand and send the files off like that, you know. And it's I think it's a good testament to show that you don't need super expensive gear, and you don't need stuff as long as you're playing the parts right. A lot of people are like, well, you can't really punch on GarageBand. It's like, well, I just do it until I get a perfect take, and then I send perfect. I just try to get like perfect takes. It takes a little longer yeah. sometimes. Like if you mess up at the end, it does suck. But it's like, I just would rather just get it all in one take anyway. That's just, I know with punching and stuff, you can do that so easily. And I'll send multiple takes. So I'll send, you know, a simple take, one with me going off, and then one just how I think it should sound kind of. Mm-hmm. And so I send at least two or three takes. And I know they can edit it together and stuff, but there's just something to me about like, I want to send a full perfect take to them, you know?
Gosh, that's old school, man. We have to get it right the first time, or get it right and send like a great, great track. Not like we're going to fix it up in a mix. So
that's, yeah. You know, and that's cool. I love the sound of that. I just love the thought of being like, yeah, I want to go into this, and it's how I would play it live. You know, it's like, yeah. no one's like stopping. Okay. I got that part. Let's go back and try this. It's like, no, here's three different full takes, and then you can chop them up if you want to, or you can use any of these and they'll be fine, you know?
Yeah.
So that's how I try to approach it.
That's very
I like
cool
that you started
with that technology.
Yeah, he got it in. There it is. There it is.
Yep. Yeah,
I love that you think that way. And I'm going to sound old now, but you know, there's so many
you
people that I know. Hey, look, you messed up my hair, man. Come on. I like the fact that you're thinking that way, that it's one cohesive thought, because a lot of times nowadays it is so normal to, okay, I've got a good verse. Now let's go take, you know, 20 stabs at the chorus. And, yeah. and just the fact that, you know, it's one, you know, stream of conscious thought that you're sending. I think that's fantastic. I think that's wonderful.
Even before I had my studio built up at my house, we had a friend whose studio we would rent out. Like I would rent out whenever I had to do session work, and I would like, you know, try to get all the session work built up. And then I would go in and do it all in one day with this guy. And I would always just tell him like, if I mess up, we can just scratch that and start over. I would just kind of same thing. Like, cause I was like, I'll get it in a full take. If I mess up, like it's fine. We'll just go back and redo it. Cause yeah. it's like, I always kind of thought, I like the idea of that. Cause I mean, think about all like the old legends and stuff when yeah. they were recording, they weren't really doing that, you know, they weren't punching right. in and stuff, you
exactly.
know? And,
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's really cool.
You're the youngest drummer that we've ever had on our show. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
you've achieved a terrific amount of success at a relatively young age, or very young age, really. So, I'm curious, what advice do you have for young drummers, you know, wanting to be successful as professional drummers?
Yeah, so honestly, I just tried to practice so much that I was like, when someone got me, they would just be like, oh yeah. Like if someone heard me play, they'd be like, oh yeah, we can't. Like, why would we hire anyone else? This guy's gonna have it all prepared. And I just, you know, I just like would sit in there and like, I just play all day, you know, I like to play drums a lot. So I wanted to just be the best drummer people had ever heard. And I still am trying to do that, you know, and My advice though is just literally like come in and just show them that you're the best that they can find, you know. And that's kind of how I've always tried to approach things. It's been just like, I know I'm not the best drummer in the world, but I know that when someone hears me, I want them to be like impressed and be like, oh whoa, like, so I'm gonna like over prepare for everything. When I go into a first rehearsal, it's like we could, like, when I do my first rehearsal, we should be able to play the show like that, you know, like,
yeah.
I don't want my rehearsal to be like struggling through, even if it's last minute. I mean, like when I got called to sub for MGK, they sent me like 40 songs with like a week. And I went in, first they had asked me to learn the album, but they had called me and told me that, or the drummer Rook had called me and said, hey, I might need a sub for these shows. Can you do it basically? And I said, yes, but I didn't have any dates or anything. And then, so that night I learned the whole album. And then the next day, their keyboardist contacted me and was like, hey, can you come up sometime this week? How long do you need to learn the album, to learn the newest album, like, so we can just run through it? Because that's mostly what we're going to play. And I'm like, oh, I already know it. So if you want me to come up today, I can do that today. And I went up and I did it right then. And then from there, I got like 40 songs to learn. And we did like an actual rehearsal like a week later. And I went in knowing every song because I was like, you need to know them all perfectly. And I found different versions. I found like, cause no one told me what versions, they just sent me song titles. Mm-hmm. And so I went through and I learned the album version. And then I would say like, okay, well, here's this video of them playing it, you know, wherever in Croatia 2 years ago, it sounds like this. So I'll learn that version. But then here's the version of them even longer ago at the Roxy doing this or something like that. And so I would just learn every version I could of the song. So I went in with two or three different versions of each song and just so ready. So when they played it, I would be like, oh, okay, it's going here. So it's from that video or from that video, you know? And like, that's how I remembered all the songs, because I was like, I don't want to go in, and especially because Rook was the one who suggested me. Mm-hmm. I don't want them to go in and be like, dude, Rook, why'd you call this guy? Like, he doesn't know this or he doesn't know this. And like, you know, no one was going to send me the stuff. So I figured I should figure it out on my own, you know, and at least go in and make it good. I want to make a good impression.
Proactive. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a theme that we've heard from so many professional drummers and amazing dudes we've had on the show. Preparation is the key. Yeah. And going in, yeah, knowing the stuff. Right. And you can't mail it in, or that bites you in the butt.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
We had, Tosh, you and I had this conversation when we were at Aquarian. We were kind of talking about preparation and sometimes the lack thereof, right? And I've been in situations working with other musicians that, you know, they're a professional musician and they show up and, you know, what key is that in? You know, or whatever the question may be. How do you deal with that? Because there's times in the business where you do run into people where they're not on top of their game. How do you personally deal with that? You know,
it is hard when you come into a gig and you want everything to be professional and you want everything. If you go in knowing everything and someone doesn't, it's frustrating. And I've been there, you know, like you do a gig and it's like, it feels like a waste of your time, you know, and you have to just remember like, okay, like, not everyone's here to do this forever. And you got to remember those are the people who don't necessarily stick around and it does get frustrating. I will say, you know, like trying to, especially when you come in there and you're like, okay, I did all this work to prepare. And now we're sitting in there waiting for someone to learn a keyboard part or a guitar part or something. And it's just like, this could have been avoided. But honestly, like as frustrating as it gets, it's just kind of like, it's how life works sometimes. And not everyone's, you know, sometimes people get called because they're a friend, or sometimes people get called because, you know, they have a reputation and they get too comfortable because they do have a good reputation. Yes. And then they, you know, start to say, I've worked with people that everyone was like talking about how incredible they were and like, oh, you're so lucky you get to play with so-and-so. And then I show up and I'm like, really? Like this person didn't even know that, you know, they didn't know anything. Like, right. And it's just like, some people get comfortable and I think just, you gotta always remember like, that doesn't mean that's how you have to be. You have to still go in and be you. And it always works out, you know, like some people, that's okay. They have their one gig, and then when they go and do something else, it's not always as good as you think, you know. But
yeah,
but that's just how some people are. And then some people don't last, and it's kind of just like you have to go in and try to just be cool no matter what. And even if it gets frustrating,
it's, well, you know, yeah. It's like you got to take care of your business, right? You can't control yep. whether other people are prepared and whether they're on top of things. And you know, if you just don't want to be that person that's holding up the rehearsal or that doesn't know the parts, right?
Yeah, it's frustrating. But I've been told like to go home from a rehearsal because it's like, oh, we need to work on this with this person. You can just go home, honestly. Like, and I was like, all right, you know, drove up to Burbank from Fullerton, but dad was leaving now, you know.
Yeah, well, I think you kind of at that point. That's one of the places where you learn what not to do, you right. know, that's,
yeah.
And I like to point that out to my students, because there's, if you look around you, you know, you can get frustrated by something like that, because it is frustrating, but it's also, I guess, if you want to spin it and look at it as a positive, well, I'm inspired now to never do that. You know, I'm inspired to, you know, when I show up, know my parts and to, and so that's that, and you're wise beyond your years for that. I mean, I think that's just, yeah. that's huge, man. That's very cool. And that's obviously why you've gotten some of these gigs, you know, and mm-hmm. done the things that you've done. Do you play with the, go ahead, Chip. Sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, Chip.
I was going to say, you've got a YouTube channel. People can go find you on YouTube, and you've got some great drum cam footage of you playing different festivals outside.
And oh, yeah.
I was going to ask you, do you have a favorite experience out of all the shows you've played? Anything stand out, like one of your favorite times on drums?
Yeah, you know, I've gotten to do so many cool, like, cool different festivals that I really have enjoyed, you know. But, like, getting to do Lollapalooza, with Jaden, we have, like, the biggest crowd of that weekend at 3 p.m. or something like that. Like, no one was expecting it, and we had... you know, 40,000 people or something like that. And
that
was an incredible experience. Just the other day I played in Mexico like a week ago. And I'm trying to remember the name of the festival, Corona Capital Festival in Mexico City. And, you know, that was incredible. Like 25,000 people in Mexico, and they knew every word of the songs. And it was just kind of like, yeah. So like I've had a lot, but I would say just because that was so recently, I would say that Corona Capital Festival, there's a few videos on my YouTube of that one that I just posted up, and it was like a week ago, and it was like so surreal, like that whole festival. And then getting off stage and going straight to eat eight Al Pastor tacos was incredible too.
Hey Tosh, could you tell us a little bit about your requirements for technology that you've had to bring into your live performance? Like, are you playing live with clicks, electronic drums and such, triggers?
Yeah, so it depends on the gig. With this artist, Carly Hansen, that I play with, that's probably like the most technical. Like, I'll play a trigger on the kick drum and the snare, and then SPDSX as well. And yep. That was kind of the biggest learning curve, because I started playing with her when I was 17, and I had... previously the only touring gig I had done before that was Nick West, who had no click track or anything like that. It was just raw live drums, and that's it, you know. It's like it was just a full band. And then going in to play with Carly, that was like kind of a learning curve. Playing to a click was never really an issue, because like my dad, funny enough, he always struggled with playing to a click because he had never really had to do it. So he always had me practice to a click, because he was like, I don't want you to have that problem.
All right, yeah. Dad.
That's cool.
Yeah. So he was like, so I grew up always playing to a click track. And so that was never really like an issue. It was more just learning how the electronics work. I think the most confusing thing ever is playing with triggers. It's just so
a little delay sometimes.
Yeah. And just like, you know, if you don't hit like super consistent, the kick drum has to be like, each note has to be the exact same. Otherwise it won't fire. And it won't make the right sound and stuff like that. And it's just like, that was kind of a big learning curve. But like, with Jaden, we run a lot of tracks, but I don't play any electronics on the drums. With Kid Laroi, we have like one clap sound that I use for the whole set, and one 808 snare, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So it's nothing too technical, but, I would say with Carly, the triggers has been like the biggest learning curve, or it was when I was younger and had to learn it. And you know, different thresholds and stuff. It's like anyone who plays with triggers knows that it's like, if you want to do ghost notes, you have to hit them super light so it doesn't fire the trigger, or yeah, super, because it's like it's all the same dynamic on the trigger, because right, you don't want it to right, be like inconsistent. Yeah. So that way, if, you know, if you hit a ghost note but it still fires the trigger, it's still going to make that loud snare sound.
Right.
You know.
Right. Yeah.
So just getting used to that definitely took a little while. But yeah, I mean, pretty much everyone that I play with now uses backing tracks and uses click track and stuff, because it's, you know, smaller bands, sometimes you can't bring a full band. Sometimes it's just a drummer and a guitarist and a singer.
Right.
And that's it. And it's like, well, you don't want to play without bass, so you got to then put the bass in the backing tracks, or even effect sounds. Like a lot of these people who started making music during the pandemic, which is like Jaden, became a singer during the pandemic, you know, like he's new to it, you know, and even like Kid Laroi's music, a lot of his stuff is produced by younger producers who just like, it comes out and they'll just go in with like one little guitar part somewhere after like the whole thing's playing the whole time, you know? And so there'll be like, oh, I found like this toy keyboard that makes this sound, and that'll just be in the background somewhere. And it's like, you can't have a musician to play all these different parts, you know?
Right. Right.
You're going to end up having a 15 piece band or something, you know? And so you need to have backing tracks, and you need to play tight with them. You know, like playing to a click is so important, because it's like, if you're not locked in, but there's 808 hi-hats going on top of your regular hi-hats, there's going to be flamming and stuff like that. And, with Jaden, like there's like, you know, snare sounds and stuff that are like, sometimes it'll just be the reverb from a snare.
And
it'll fire at the same time that I hit my snare. So if I'm sometimes if I'm slightly off, but that echo goes, it's like, what the hell? You know, it's like, when I first got on and we were doing it like that, I was like, oh, okay, I've never tried it like that, but that's cool.
Are you having to load loops into the SPDX sampler yourself, or samples, or are they just playing a backtrack for you?
So I typically will load them myself, but usually someone will like send me the samples, and it's just like, put them on whatever pad you want. I've also done it a few times with I did a gig with Ashton Irwin, and we did like this live stream thing during the pandemic, and it was like his music directing team, they have it all like wired MIDI, so it's just a cable plugs into their computer, and so they just tell me what pad I want it on, or I just tell them what pad I want it on. And I'll just be like, all right, on pad number 6 or something like that. And then, and so then that sound will always be right there. And so I've had it a few different ways. I'm pretty good at loading the sounds in, but I'm not super quick with it, is the thing. So when they tell me to do it quickly, I'm like, all right, and I just try to like speed through that. It's a process, but usually, I mean, I haven't had to put anything in too rushed. Usually it's like, all right, here's these sounds for rehearsal next week or something like that.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah. You've got a little time to work it out. Yeah.
Yeah. Even if it's in there. Sorry, what was that?
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Sorry.
I was going to ask a question, but go ahead, Jeremy.
I was going to ask, on some of your bigger shows, do you end up working with a drum tech?
Yes, I do. Yeah. It depends, because sometimes I get to bring my dad on as my tech, which is always super fun. Mm-hmm. And then other times it'll just be someone. Sometimes there's like a tech who works for, like, say, the guitarist and the drummer both, and he's setting up both the people's gear. I like when I get to have my dad, obviously, because he's been setting up my drums since I was a child. So, you know, he knows exactly what I like.
Hey, let's all peek out on gear. Oh, I'm sorry, Chip.
I was just going to say, my question was, let's talk about your drum set and your gear and your endorsements.
We're on the same page, Chip.
Yeah, so I have I've been playing Zildjian cymbals my whole life. My dad always played Zildjian cymbals. Never really even tried anything else. There's nothing else I want to try. I love Zildjian cymbals. Same with Vic Firth drumsticks and Aquarian drum heads. You know, I've been playing those literally just like forever, you know, and
Are you constantly chasing that perfect snare drum tone? Do you find that after you put a new head on your snare and tune it up, you still have to apply something to the drum to achieve the tone you're after? The members of the Drummers Education Connection would like to suggest the Aquarian Focus X. The Focus X is a 10 mil texture coated head with a unique vented muffling ring tucked into the hoop underneath the head. The Focus X produces a sensitive snare response and a full articulate sound while eliminating any unwanted ring. It's the perfect all-around head for studio recording or live playing. Check out the Focus X at your favorite drum shop today.
And Aquarian's like family to me. Like, they're so close. You know, it's like,
yeah.
I could call Chris Brady at any point. I know Chris has been on the show, he mentioned, but I could about anything just be like, hey, check out, you know, I don't know, whatever. I'll text him even for non-drum related things, you know.
Dude, I don't want to interrupt your thought, but Chris Brady is a dear, dear friend and just salt of the earth, is he not? He is just a great guy. Isn't he the best?
Absolutely. Dude, yeah, literally, like, people don't come close to that, you know, like.
Yeah, right.
Right.
Also, yeah, he pays us to say that every episode.
Chris, you owe us your $40 now, so.
Chris, you guys are getting 40 for that?
Zildjian cymbals, Vicfer sticks, Aquarian drum heads. What else are you using?
Yeah, so I record with the QSC TouchMix 30. So I use QSC, who Brad Zell is an incredible rep over there. I use JH Audio, and my drums are going to be announced in like a week. So I'm just going to wait to say that.
Big announcement.
I almost slipped because we talked about that the other day, and I almost said it, and I was like, I better not. It was at the beginning of the show. Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Ooh, will it start with a D? Will it start with an L? Will it start with a P?
You can't ask
who
that, Rick.
Knows?
Yeah,
who
you
knows?
Can't ask that, Rick, because everybody will know.
I know.
One of the things I like about you is you're affable and your personal style. You're always so positive when you're talking to people. And on your Instagram feeds, you do these Instagram lives sometimes. I think it was about maybe 5 years ago, I was watching you on Instagram Live, and I popped on. You were like, "Hey, Chip Ritter," you know. I was like, "What?
Oh, yeah.
What? This is so cool! Like, how? What got you into doing live streams on Instagram, and got you into doing that?"
You know, I like to talk a lot. You know, like, I like sharing stuff. I like, you know, I always wish that. Like my favorite drummers would do that stuff more, you know, and I love, you know, just trying to show what I'm working on. And like, and then when I'm talking to people, you know, I do it all the time when I'm on tour. Like if I'm bored in my hotel room and it's, I'm jet lagged at, you know, in Japan, it's the middle of the night there, but it's the morning here. I'll just go live sometimes and be like, all right, you know, let's see what's happening, you know? And
right on.
And I just kind of like, I don't know. I've always like, you know, just, I thought it was really fun to do, you know, and I like I said, when I'm at home, I like to do it and share.
You got a good rapport with your fans. That's really cool.
Oh, thanks, man. I'm just like, it's so crazy to me that anyone even wants to watch me play drums, to tell you the truth. Like, so when people like get on there, I'm just like, well, it's so cool. You know, it's like, I don't know. I think it's crazy that I get to do what I do. So I feel super lucky.
Well, you got a great attitude. I hope you stay like that, man. Don't change.
Thanks.
Yeah, don't change, man. Definitely.
You never know. In a year, I might be a total.
Yeah, man.
The main thing is you want to be like Rick when you get older, and not like Bart, mostly like Rick.
Yeah, you want to be more like Rick than me. Exactly. Exactly. Come on, man. You're gonna you hurt the one feeling I have.
Oh,
you know?
I'm sorry.
No, I love you,
Bart.
Yeah,
the best drummer would be a combination of Rick and Bart, right?
There you go.
Oh, God. You know what? I always say this about Rick. It just turned into the Rick Show. Rick is like a positive energy hand grenade. You know, if you had a hand grenade, you pulled the pin on it and you threw it in the room and it just blew positive stuff all over the room, that would be Rick. He's like, you put Tosh together, you can't be in a bad mood, man. You guys would just be, you know, how can it be a bad day? I'm hanging out with Tosh and Rick.
That's right. I know. Tosh, you must be very fun to tour with. Now, do you write your own music too?
You know, I do. I write a lot of drum parts and stuff. Sometimes I'll get together with like producers and stuff and artists and I can just like send them like a full drum part kind of thing, you know, and I'll just like have like an idea in my head, and I'll just, you know, send, here's, this is what it would sound like with a verse and a chorus and an intro, you know, all that stuff like together, and I'll send that, and sometimes I'll write songs like that, actually. Yeah. Like quite often I do that as well, and yeah, so I love writing music and stuff, but I love, you know, recording in general. So whether yeah. it's, whether there's a part already written or it's just comes from nothing, like as long as I'm like, you know, have new material coming out, I'm excited, you know.
Yeah, man, I got a good feeling about you as a songwriter as well, and your solo career.
Oh, thank you.
I just see it, man. You've done so much at 21, yeah. and there's just so much ahead, and so I think yeah. I think you've got just like unstoppable potential.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, man.
Hey, yeah. Tosh, do you have any favorite drummers that you're listening to right now that you can hip us to? Anybody that's an influence?
Chip Ritter.
Yeah, yeah, that's mostly just Chip Ritter. there's this guy, Quessy Robinson, who I really like a lot. He's from New Jersey. I'm trying to remember his Instagram. He changes his Instagram name all the time, but he's an incredible drummer. I'll find that and share that with all you guys. But Quessy Robinson is his name, and Boots Green is, he's not really new, but he's one of my favorite drummers right now. I always watch his stuff, and his name's Eric Boots Green, but he's played drums for Jay-Z, Wiz Khalifa, like Usher, and he's just like, honestly, he's such a he's got such an original style, and that's what I love most about drummers is like when I find someone who I'm like, oh, they don't sound like everyone else, and mm-hmm. he could just play just a straight 4/4 beat, and it's like, whoa, dude, like that sounds sick. And it's just playing two drums, you know, and yeah, he's an incredible drummer and a producer as well. And Al Cleveland is a big one for me. Just mm-hmm. We've been on a few different gigs that each other have done. You know, like I filled in when I was 18. I filled in for him with Bryce Vine, and he had just had a kid and had to be at home with his wife and son, and so I went out and filled in on a few shows with them, and dude, man, copying that, like that guy's drum parts is that's no joke, man. He's got such a sick style, and he's another one that's like, you know, he can play a simple 4/4 beat, and it just is like, dude, this is insane. He's so talented, and has such an original style and feel. So yeah, I would say those are three drummers that I really have been listening to a lot lately.
Right on. Cool. We're going to look those guys up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very cool. Very cool. Hey, what about teaching? Do you give lessons, Tosh? Do you like, you have anybody that you give lessons to?
Yeah, I do actually. I enjoy teaching a lot. I don't like necessarily publicly promote it a lot just because I've been so busy. It's hard to like, find time to do lessons kind of, you know, mm-hmm. so just, but if someone contacts me and really wants lessons, I'm more than happy to, you know, make some time and, give lessons when I can. I have this girl, Gabby, and, she's in Connecticut, I think. And, mm-hmm. She, like, I met her, at one of my shows, and she had never touched a drum in her entire life. And now she's like in her school marching band and like just killing it. She got like, she's playing snare drum in her marching band, and like so it's really cool, you know. I love giving lessons when I can, and then sometimes I'll have like incredible drummers hit me up that are like want to learn stuff, and I'm like, I don't feel like I can teach you anything. I'll send you videos of me. I'll do that a lot, actually, when I'm like working on stuff. Like I have a lot of friends that I'll just like send videos and be like, here you go, I'm working on this if you want to try this out, you know. And so but yeah, it's a bit like few and far between. It's hard to like get on a teaching schedule, I guess. So I mm-hmm. more just say like, you know, I can give you a lesson now, and then maybe in the future if I have any time, you know. But but yeah, I respect teachers, man. I respect what teaching is. It's not easy, you know, and it's hard to get like my point across, I guess, or like it's hard to like explain what I'm doing sometimes, because sometimes I'm practicing stuff and I'm like, oh, this is hard, and I'll start doing it, and then in the end I don't even know what it is.
Yeah,
and right. It's just like it's weird, and it's like, okay, well, this is, I guess I could think about it, and like this is in 7, but it takes me a long time to break stuff down,
right?
So it's like So yeah, teaching is definitely a good skill, and it's hard to do, but I love doing it when I can. But yeah, like I said, it hasn't been very often just because I've been so busy.
What were you, Tosh, you said you started touring when you were 16, is that right?
Yeah.
So like, did you like take a leave from high school, or like, hey, I got this gig and see you later, or did you come back, or like, how did that work balancing out the needs of school and touring?
Yeah, so what my parents want me to say is kind of different than what actually happened. But, but yeah, I mean, I had been homeschooled up until high school, and then when I went to freshman year of high school, and then after freshman year, I started getting busy, and this was before I was even touring, though. I was like, I think I should go homeschooled again. Just because I'm getting busy with everything, you know, just like going around and just, you know, playing a lot locally and stuff. And it was just like school was getting kind of in the way. And then just pretty shortly after that, I auditioned for Nick West, and that was my first touring gig. So literally I auditioned for her on my 16th birthday. So, you know, went straight. 3 weeks later, I was in Russia playing with her, you know.
Wow.
Yeah, so I got pretty, you know, pretty quickly I was able to start touring. But yeah, so it wasn't like I didn't like drop out, but I just kind of stopped going, you know, like went back to being homeschooled.
And when you were 16, like, was there a requirement that one of your parents go with you?
No, they just had to make it so so like the tour manager was my legal guardian whenever I was away.
Right.
So they would just sign, basically just, it's actually quite easy, to tell you the truth. Whenever I've had parents ask me like, oh, my son got this offer for this, or like, my son, you know, like what if this happens? I'm like, it's actually pretty easy. Like my parents will just, they just had to sign some paper that says like, when I'm from this time period to this time period. So every time I would leave, it'd be like, you know, from June 3rd to July 12th, you know, you're in the hands of Hubie Wang or whatever, you know, the guy who was, he was our guitar player. And I think I was with him the most. Uh-huh. So they would always, I think it would be either him or our tour manager.
Very cool. So yeah. Your parents are obviously very supportive of what it is that you do.
Yeah. And like, and my dad, that was my dad's living forever. So, they kind of just like knew it was like a possibility. It wasn't like I mean, the thing is, Nick West was, our whole family loved her, and our whole family listened to her music all the time. So we're all big Prince fans. So, and she was Prince's bass player. So it was kind of like, it wasn't like I was necessarily like dropping out to like go like pursue like my band, or like try to like hopefully make it. It was like, okay, I'm going to go play with an artist that I'm a fan of, and we're all a fan of, you know? Right. So they were very just like confident, like, oh, awesome. Like, he got a cool job. Like, we'll let him go do that, you know? And like, they're super supportive of everything. Like, my brother's getting his PhD in history, and it's like, we're like complete opposite jobs, but they're just super supportive of everything, you know, that we want to do. And yeah.
Beautiful.
I think that that's so important. I mean, that's so important. I see it with my students a lot, that where their parents are supportive, they, you know, a student will always flourish. And before we got on, behind you, there's a picture of a lion in the background. You said your sister is really talented and she's an artist, and they probably support the heck out of that. I think that that is just wonderful. So my hat's off to them. That's great. That's,
yeah,
very
absolutely.
Cool. Very cool. Yeah. Hey, Rick, Tosh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no worries. Bart, Tosh, what style would you say you gravitate towards playing? Like, how would you describe your drumming?
You know, it's, I don't really know. I guess, I tend to get called for a lot of like rock gigs, I guess, yeah. Like different types of rock. And, but like, I mean, when I got called for Kid Laroi, he like, they made a thing like to make sure I knew that it was like, because he thought I was such a good hip hop drummer and had such good like rap feel and stuff like that. But like, if you heard me playing for the last week, I've been sitting in there just doing brushes all day. So it's like,
beautiful.
So I'm kind of like, I don't know. I don't really know how to describe it. I love playing everything. Like, man, honestly, like when I'm in my drum room, it goes, you'll hear me play, an Avenged Sevenfold song and then a Bob Marley song back to back. Like it's always changing, you know? And, Well, there it is. I love everything.
Yeah, yeah, man. It sounds like you're basically you're absorbing all different kinds of styles, and then you can fit into any gig and make it your own.
Yeah, Tosh's style is melt your face off.
yeah.
That's great, the goal.
Man. Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome, man. Awesome. Very cool. What are you working on brushes? You said you're in there working on brush stuff. What are you doing?
I'm just trying to get good at playing brushes and like some old jazz stuff. I love Christmas. So old Christmas songs and stuff, you know, that are on brushes and just trying to get good feel. I've been talking to, do you guys know Grayson Nekrutman?
His name sounds familiar.
Incredible jazz drummer. I don't know.
Yeah.
He's another one to add to the list of drummers I've been listening to a lot.
Yeah.
I don't know how old he is. I think he's younger than me. I think I don't know exactly how old he is, but probably like, you know,
he's 21.
Okay, so yeah, so he's like around my age, but I've been talking to him about maybe I was like I'm going to be in New York with the day off before MSG, so and that's where he lives. So I'm going to see if I can head up and like maybe take a lesson with him. And he could show me some brush stuff because I want to get really good at that stuff. It's just so like, it's so cool. It's a whole different part of the brain than the rest of drumming, you know?
Yeah. You know, who's another great guy in New York, if you have the time, is Daniel Glass.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Is he from New York? I didn't know that.
Yeah. He lives in New York. He's a monster. Yeah.
Sick. Amazing technique drummer. Amazing technique.
I think it's phenomenal. Just so commendable at your young age that you're still learning and still looking to take lessons and still absorbing things from other musicians that you don't think that you have it all down. I just commend you for that humble attitude.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, like there's so much I want to learn and I, you know, when I like play drums, like people always ask me like, what's your goal? And it was never like to be the most famous or the richest. It was just, I just want to be the best drummer in my own eyes kind of. And so I'm just kind of always going to be working towards that. And I love working towards it, to tell you the truth. Like for me, I'd rather be sitting in there working on a weird, you know, 7-stroke roll exercise rather than anything else, you know, like that's my favorite thing is sitting in my drum room practicing. So it's just kind of like, yeah.
Passion.
That's very cool, man. Like I agree with what what Chip said. It's very commendable. You know, it's really, especially when you've played at such high levels at such a young age, it's really easy to lose yourself in that, I'm sure. And to still, you know, have that groundedness, if you will. It's very cool. You know, I like what Kenny Aronoff says, where he says, you know, I know I'll never be the greatest drummer in the world, but I'm committed to being the best drummer that I can be. And that's kind of what what I think of when I hear you talk. That's mm-hmm. just outstanding, man.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Very, very, very cool. Very cool.
Thank you so much.
But I want to go back to the technology question for just a second, Tosh. Rick had some questions about the technology. When you're playing with tracks or with the click, are you running that off to the side on a computer, or are you letting somebody else do that? Or is that somebody else's job?
Yeah, it's usually someone else's job. I don't do that. I always kind of make it a thing. I don't want it to become a thing that I'm going to start doing that. I've done it before, like with my own band and stuff, because I was the only one there that could do it, you know? And,
right.
And, but for the most part, like I don't really want to start saying I do that, because then it's going to become a thing that I'm the guy that does it, because I don't really want to. I'd rather just play the drums.
Right.
And, but typically there's a, like a playback guy on most of the gigs that I do. So that's someone's designated job. Sometimes it'll be playback and monitors. Sometimes it's, you know, playback and tech or something like that, you know. But a lot of times there's just like a designated playback person. And so they run all the tracks and click and stuff. And it goes just straight to the ears. And, yeah, it's their whole job.
I've cool. got a question for you, Tosh. Do you have like a lawyer and an agent and a publicist and all those people that are like on a team for you? Or is it all your dad that takes care of all your stuff?
You know, the amount of times that I text my mom and I say, hey, could you check my email? There's this thing I have to respond to and I don't really want to read it right now. This is like, my mom is she helps out on so much stuff. And You know, I to tell you the truth, I haven't needed a lot of that stuff. You know, I haven't. There's like a lot of it's just like an agent or anything like that. Like, I don't know. I just kind of get calls and I say yes or no. And yeah, I mean,
but you have contracts you sign, right?
Well, yeah, when you there's contracts and stuff, they're not super like in depth and not super like big words and stuff. You know, it's like you can figure it out. You know, I have a there's enough of us here that we all my mom and dad and grandma and brother and sister. Honestly, everyone kind of helps out around with me and stuff. And
beautiful.
Yeah. You know, so I we pretty much handle everything. We have a lot of friends that we can have help out with any of that, too. Like, anytime I need a lawyer, we have a good family friend who can help out and stuff. But to tell you the truth, a lot of it is just done with us. And yeah.
His contract reads, I agree to show up and melt your face off at the drums. You agree to pay me.
Yeah, basically.
Well, you know, but it's important to acknowledge, like, you know, all of our success comes with support, you know, and it sounds like you're getting it mostly from your family, which is just fantastic, man. It's
Just
a beautiful thing.
Yeah, yeah, it's amazing, man. Like they're so helpful and supportive with everything, you know. And
yeah.
I mean, I can't tune a rack tom to save my life. And my dad's like, I'll just be like, hey, I need some help out here. So
right. Yeah. Well, again, I know we've all said it, but congratulations on all your success, man. Thanks for coming on our show.
Yeah, yeah.
It's been super inspirational to have you on and hear about your successes and your approach and everything, man. I wish you the best of luck with all the things you do.
Oh, thank you.
Keep being you, Tosh. Keep being
you.
Yeah.
Very
thank you so much.
I do have one important question because I lived in Fullerton for 21 years and you didn't live far from me. I was over by the airport. I think.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is the question that we ask everybody on deck, depending on where they live. And it's the most important question of them all.
Yes.
In Fullerton, where's the best place to get pizza?
The best place to get pizza. Man, I leave Fullerton for this, to tell you the truth. And I'm gonna answer. I'm sorry, but I don't want to hurt any feelings. But Sergeant Pepperoni's in at Costa Mesa or Newport, it's like on like the border, I guess.
No way.
Really? It's my favorite pizza.
You know, Bart, I hate to break this to you, Bart, but Fullerton is not known as the pizza capital.
Yeah, Bart.
Dude, you guys are jumping on me today, man. Oh, my God.
Damn, yeah, I'm so sorry, but Sergeant Pepperoni's and they have this meatball ricotta pizza that's life-changing.
It's life-changing. I love it.
So if you want to drum like Tosh, go get the meatball.
That's exactly.
You know, maybe we should do the next deck clinic at one of these pizza places.
Oh,
that's not a bad idea.
We should do it at Bobby A's one time.
Oh
dude, if we do that, we won't be able to play, you know. Everything will be blah, you know, be way too slow.
Tosh, good luck on your tour, man. Safe.
Yeah, thank you, Tosh.
Thank you guys so much.
Yeah,
you bet, man.
Tosh, come back anytime, man. Keep us posted on your developments.
Absolutely.
Oh, thank you. I'll be back for sure.
Right on, man.
Awesome. Cool, man. Thanks, buddy.
All right, we'll see y'all next week. Thanks for tuning in, everybody.
Thanks
for watching.
Woohoo!
Dude, the spin.